Hello and welcome to today's episode of Pub Chat. I'm your host, Colin Enquist. I'm here with my partner in crime, Adrian Trimble.
Hello, hello.
And we have Amaya from Detroit joining us again today. It's been a while.
Hey, guys.
Today we're going to drink Bourbon County Stout. We've been saving this for a while to do this episode. And we're going to catch up with Amaya on kind of his beer escapades down there and then kind of discuss the beer websites we all frequent.
Mm-hmm. And drink Bourbon County.
And drink Bourbon County.
So which is kind of the reason I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
That I live here, but, you know, it's a side effect.
We won't go into too much of the brewery because we've done a couple Goose Island episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think one specifically about Goose Island and their sale to InBev last year sometime. But yeah, so Bourbon County's been around since, like, 08, and I think it was one of the first, like, bourbon barrel-aged stouts to hit the North American market.
I have no idea. That seems like a bit weird. No, there's no way it's one of the first.
Okay, maybe it was one of the first that got big.
I think it was the first that got big, but I think, I'm not sure, maybe I'm just making this up because it's Founders and it's Michigan, but I think they were one of the first barrel-aged people.
I have no idea.
Honestly, yeah.
I am pretty sure that people would do barrel aging stuff before 2000.
Yeah.
So. Oh no, yep. for sure. I don't think they were the first to do it. I think they were more like the first to be like it became like kind of mainstream. I think.
Agree.
Became cool.
It became cool. Yes.
Okay, I gotta drink this. It's cracking time.
Right. Ready.
It's definitely like it's 15%. That's crazy. I mean, most stouts are not that ridiculous.
No. But this is Bourbon County.
It's not a normal stout.
It's so thick.
It's so thick and black.
Too easy.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's like almost no head on mine.
Yeah, there's not much on mine either.
Well, on my 2013 bottle, there's a ton.
That's weird, eh? That it would be that different?
I'd be curious to see how much carbonation actually dies down over the year, because if it's a sealed bottle, obviously, it's in a sealed area where no light or oxidation's getting in. I don't know why it would be less head, right?
Yeah, and they were. I mean, they were in a dark and quiet area.
Yeah. It also travel back from Chicago with us.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Did you pick this up on the trip that we met up at?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know if we... I think we bought it at one of the... Oh, we found this actually... No, we bought this in Grand Forks.
Did we?
Yeah. Because at Happy Harry's, they had one 4-pack left.
Oh, that's totally right.
Yeah. So it actually would have been our U.S. trip before we went down to Chicago.
Oh, okay.
We did get some Bourbon County, I believe, in Chicago from George, but we drank it there with him.
Yeah. I was gonna say when I came to visit, we drank KBS and Bourbon County that night.
Yeah.
And many others.
There might have been some beers. There might have been some beers.
Really? I don't know.
I think Adrian passed out on a couch fairly early.
I don't recall that. Okay.
Hashtag.
Let's drink this. Well, let's smell it, I guess. Smells like heaven.
It's actually not as strong as... Once the booziness has calmed down, it's not as strong of an O as I was expecting.
Nope. Although we did kind of pour the entire thing.
Still.
It didn't give us much room for head retention.
Right? Yeah.
On my end, it's... You can smell the booziness right off the top, for sure.
It's definitely like some raisiny kind of...
Yeah, like the dark, like, dates type fruits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's still a little bit of chocolate, and I mean, there's still a booziness in the nose, but it's not like what I've only ever had it fresh-ish, so.
There's a lot of booziness in the taste. Mm-hmm. And a lot of chocolate and bourbon and yum,
mm-hmm.
yum, yum.
Well, the funny part about this beer when it was released this year was, I remember you guys obviously know Evil Twin Brewing from, I think, Denmark, right?
Yeah.
So on Twitter, the day that they released it, they put out a tweet saying, "I can't believe all these people are going crazy over an InBev release. What is the world coming to?" and everybody was like, "Oh, you're just jealous. You're just this and that." And they're like, "No, we just don't like unbalanced beers." And ever since they said that, it's been stuck in my head. And every time I drink a Bourbon County, I'm like, man, they're right. It is really boozy, but it's still good. It's not. I mean, it's not like it's just a shot of whiskey, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I mean, it's always a great stout, but like it is
most Russian Imperial stouts and like super high ale contents like stouts and stuff like that. I find, you know, even though they release them yearly, I don't think you're necessarily supposed to drink them right away. You should like maybe buy a 12 pack and drink one fresh and age the rest.
Yeah.
Like,
do you know lots of people that buy 12 packs of Bourbon County?
Well, if I had the option to, I would.
Yeah, I probably would too. But
I was gonna say I would probably do that for this beer and KBS for sure.
Yeah.
Were you able to get all of the Bourbon County? Because there was what, 5 variations this year?
I got 2. I got the regular one and the barley wine.
Okay, so
like, what are the different variations? Because it was only like 6 months ago I realized that there was different Bourbon Counties.
I think the cherry rye was the new one they did this year. They do a barley wine as well.
And the coffee.
And the coffee, believe, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not all stouts?
They are. They're all stouts, yeah. But they're just a version, a little bit of a different version.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're not, are they all bourbon barrel aged?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I think they did, in like the batch we're drinking, they did, I think it was 1,000 barrels of like the regular Bourbon County.
Uh-huh.
And then the 2013, they upped the barrel count to like 2,500 barrels.
Oh, wow.
So I would assume
it's called the InBev effect.
Yeah. I would assume it's a little bit easier to come by, maybe, but I'm not entirely sure because we don't get it in our market, so.
No.
It was still pretty hard. Like, I got a majority – actually, I got almost all of mine in Lansing because I have a friend out in Lansing, and she knows the stores to go to. So I'm like, buy as much as you can. So I think I had about six or seven of them. And, like, different varieties. I gave a few away. I still have one barley wine left and two regulars left, nice. So.
Nothing wrong with that. But
definitely I can see that, I'm assuming that since InBev bought them, they're probably doing a better job and a faster job, I should say, because since they have the capacity to do so.
Yeah, I mean, like, we had discussed this on the podcast when it was just me and him about how kind of InBev buying Goose Island, and the fact that, like, I've noticed it's easier to find, like, Matilda and Pepe Nero and stuff like that since InBev has bought them.
That's true, yeah. Like, their distribution seems to have spread because, you know, even 2 years ago in Grand Forks, which, I mean, Grand Forks is, like, the middle of nowhere, basically, you could get, like, the Goose Island IPA, and that was about it.
Yeah, and 312 or whatever.
Yeah.
I was going to say 312 is everywhere.
Yeah, and like, yeah, but that was all you could get. You certainly couldn't get Bourbon County or like Pepe Nero.
Well, even when George and I went to, or when you were there, for when we all went to Minneapolis one time.
Yeah.
They, like, the Goose Island 312 is everywhere, but when we were at, like, all the beer stores, there wasn't much actual other Goose Island stuff.
Yeah, and that was in Minneapolis.
Yeah, and then when we went back last year, there was tons.
Yeah. Yeah, it was everywhere. We even had it on tap in Grand Forks? Or,
I think so.
Or was it Fargo?
It might have been Fargo.
Yeah.
One of the two.
Yeah. Still, but either way, we had Bourbon County Stout on tap in North Dakota.
Yeah.
that just sounds so weird.
Yeah.
You know, they barely have highways, so, but
apparently there's a new brewery going up downtown Fargo.
There is a downtown in Fargo?
Apparently.
I imagine it's just like the movie.
Yeah, the only problem with the movie is it takes place in Minnesota. In
Minnesota.
Yeah, in Minnesota, right. I got that confused. Yeah. And the TV show is filmed in Alberta, I think.
Somewhere in Canada, yeah.
Yeah.
No offense, but all those barely inhabitable places look the same.
So true.
When there's like 10 feet of snow on them, and it's windy and cold and...
We've almost got rid of all our snow here. There's still a few places at the park when I went for my jog the other day that there's like... No sun really hits there, and there's still a little bit of snow.
Yeah, there's a few, like, tree lines and stuff out in the country that still got piles of snow by them, but...
It's funny you say that, because when I went up north 2 weekends ago, there was still a little bit of snow, like you guys were talking about, and the lake was just filled with ice. I was
where?
Like,
okay, for you, where is up north?
up north is anywhere, to me, this is what I count up north, anywhere that's like Traverse City area, which is about three to four hours northeast of me. So that would be in line with like Green Bay around there.
Okay.
It might be actually a little bit of north of Green Bay. So
okay.
On our side of the state, obviously.
See, that would be like a winter sun destination for us.
Yeah. Our winter was a little rough this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we got the same weather. I mean, not the same weather, but we got everything. A lot of snow, wind, cold, polar vortex, and everything else in between.
Sounds like what we dealt with.
Yeah.
It was great.
See, but the difference is you guys know how to deal with it up there. Here, it's the roads barely, they don't get plowed, and it's just a mess.
That is true.
It is amazing. Like, it's ridiculous. When it snows here, it's gone the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not like residential streets, but
our main streets are done pretty good.
Yeah. And our main streets are done while it's snowing.
Yeah, that's true. As soon as this starts snowing and it's like they're calling for snow for at least over an hour,
yeah,
like the plows are out.
Yeah, the worst thing is when you kind of pull onto the street and there's like six snow plows coming towards you in like a fucking convoy.
Yeah.
Colin, I still don't know how your brother drives a smart car in the winter.
I'm surprised he hasn't.
I think he drives it most of the time, and then every once in a while he just kind of picks it up.
Yeah. But I didn't actually realize how well Winnipeg was at snow removal until I had moved to Edmonton. And it was just like, there was a day later, like they're still better than most cities, but there was like a day later and there was like these big, like instead of having the six graders go down, there would be like three. So there'd be big piles of snow like clumped along the streets.
Yeah, we do that well.
Yeah.
At least we got that. We can't, you know, open a brew pub or anything like that, but
no,
growlers are illegal. Yeah. But
so how are the roads up there after the winter?
About giant potholes.
Yeah, okay. Just potholes everywhere. It's ridiculous. You need to put your summer tires on so that you have the maneuverability to kind of dodge the potholes.
Yeah, there were some potholes that somebody posted a picture on Twitter. He went like stood out in the pothole and it went like almost up to his knee. Like, it was unreal.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. And it's better now than it was, like, a month ago, but
yeah,
it's still stupid.
No, here, it's just brutal. I mean, there's so many blowouts on the freeway because of the potholes. It's just ridiculous in our area.
Yeah, you can't. It's funny, though, because, like, the Manitoba, like, line is, oh, well, we have such shitty weather, we can't really maintain our roads properly.
Yeah.
But then, so all of a sudden, if you drive across the border to North Dakota, where they get the same fucking weather,
yeah,
somehow their roads are a lot better,
much better.
It's funny. It's funny you say that. Same thing with here in Ohio. I mean, we get a little bit more snow in our Detroit area, but it's not that big of a difference. The temperature still drops, and they have phenomenal roads compared to our roads.
Yeah, I think it comes down to how much money they spend on their roads.
Yeah,
and with us, it's more like it.
And all our construction is government, right? So
yeah.
That's also a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't work as hard as they should.
No. Because, I mean, like, if you go to, like, well, I'll use Alberta as an example, it's actual construction agencies. So the government says, we'll give you this much money to do this, but if you do it faster, we'll, you know, give you a little more or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you'll still get that, and then you'll be able to get another job.
Yeah.
So they're, like, it's unreal how quick they fix the roads out there compared to here, where they've been fixing Ness Avenue, which is a major street kind of by my house, for
it's
9 months.
Like feet of street.
9 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been down to two lanes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, again, think about it this way, too. Like, the people that fix the roads here, why would you want to fix them? It's almost like you have job security 3 years later when the roads crumble again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a valid point.
Yeah, but you're always going to be building more roads.
Yeah.
In Britain, there was, when I moved to Wales, there was a stretch of road, and it's like two-lane road, like one lane in each direction. But they had a section of it where part of the road had fallen into the river. And they put up a set of lights so that, like, one, like an automated set of lights so that only one direction of travel could go at a time. So you'd be, like, going along, and then sometimes you'd have to stop and wait for the traffic going the other way and whatever. I lived in Wales for 8 years,
And that set of lights was there for the entire 8 years.
Nice. Well, we're talking about highways over in Europe. There's apparently one in Netherlands that's like glow in the dark that they're testing right now.
Yeah, they've done like they glow in the dark. I think it's just the lines.
Yeah,
are glow in the dark.
I think it's like it, but it's fairly thick lines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like it takes up almost half the road or something like
that. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's weird.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool.
In Britain, in the middle of like between lanes or between lanes, they have what they call cat's eyes. And it's basically just like, it just reflects headlights.
Yeah.
So, when you're driving down the road, even if you're the only car and there's no street lights,
you'll see.
You can see where the road is a lot further ahead.
That's fair.
Because it kind of reflects the light.
The glow in the dark idea is a great idea, because if you have something on the road that would, I mean, obviously glow in the dark stickers, right? Remember when you're younger, the closer you put them to light, the more they would light power up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on sunny days, you're pretty much free energy. There's nothing running it.
I feel like when I had glow in the dark stickers when I was a kid, like eventually they lose their glow.
They do eventually, yeah. They don't work
so
forever.
So my assumption would be that they would lose their glow like a lot quicker if they were like in, you know, getting driven over.
But is it just a coat of paint? Like, are they just going to put the same amount of paint they do normally when they paint the lines every year?
Yeah, that's true.
So
I mean, in Europe, they don't paint the lines every year, though. Because they do it well,
yeah.
So they don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah. True. I was actually so shocked when I pulled out onto Portage, which is another main street in Winnipeg, and the lines were painted. And I was like, holy shit, I know where the roads are, like where
really?
Each lane is.
Where? Like all the way along?
I think at least all the way from your place to my place.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't been down there. They must have done that recently.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like yesterday.
Oh, sweet. Always fun when you get to see the lanes again.
Yeah. Yeah. You really know if you're actually in the lane.
That's why they don't fix the roads, because everybody's using the ruts to figure out where they should be driving.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about this beer that much.
It's really tasty.
Yeah.
It's really tasty.
It's really good.
It's got a lot of like dark fruit notes in the finish, but it's like crazy boozy still.
Yeah.
Even though, like, I mean, I say crazy boozy for 15%. This isn't crazy boozy.
No,
it's not. If you had put this in front of me, like a blind taste test, I would have said it's probably about 9-10.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you said it was a 10% beer, yeah. I probably would have said okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
See, I think the one thing I noticed about high octane stouts that don't taste high octane, sometimes like KBS. You put the coffee in there, and I feel like it loses a lot of the booziness, which is not a bad thing sometimes.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I can see that. It's a lot fruitier than I remember.
Yeah,
like from what you know when I've had it fresher.
And there's like a touch of vanilla too to it. I think.
Mm-hmm. But it's and really good though.
And ever since you said raisins and plums, you know, the only thing the other beer I can think of that is similar to this, but I don't know if it's I know it's not as high alcohol, but I know it's up there, is the Wake Up the Dead Stout by Left Hand Brewing.
Oh yeah,
that's a great stout.
Yeah, that's a good beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you said raisins, I'm like, man, that's exactly what that reminds me of.
I find like when I'm drinking these high alcohol content stouts, when I'm not drinking them side by side, they're all very similar. That is, I have a hard time differentiating which one is which sometimes.
I agree.
And not that I don't love them. I would still rather drink this over most beers. But I just think, like, if I'm going to spend the money on a Bourbon County, there's probably, like, 10 beers on the shelf that are very, very similar.
I still haven't had the Half Pints Barrel-Aged Stout. I'm waiting for, I don't know what I'm waiting for, but I still haven't had it, but I'm assuming like that's as good, if not better than this one.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah,
probably.
I'd say it's on par.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. You're right. I mean, they're, you know, I've had a decent amount of bourbon barrel aged stouts, and they all taste fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily choose one over the other.
Yeah. Well, it's like in Canada, everybody loses their shit for the Eclipse series by, who makes Eclipse? It's one of the BC breweries. And they're good. They're good. They're not $30 a bottle, wait in line for 2 hours good.
Yeah.
When you can get other, like, Temp Noir for us, at least, and like, stuff like it.
Yeah.
That, or even, like, the flying monkey stuff. Like,
yeah.
Oh god, the flying monkey stuff is awesome.
You were here for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a bottle of BNL that I'd been aging, which we cracked, I think, last week, right?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I still have one bottle.
I have one bottle of BNL, one bottle of Chocolate Manifesto, and one bottle of the Maple City and Color.
I have one of all those. There's 20 bottles of Chocolate Manifesto left in the city, so I'm very tempted to go buy a couple more.
Ooh.
Even though I can't really afford it.
And I can get me one.
I still have a bottle with your name actually written on it. So
nice.
So that will be aging for about 3 years. If I haven't given it to you by then, I'll probably drink it.
Could you not get any like from Ontario? I guess it's a long drive, hey?
Well, I could probably go to Windsor, but I have to stay over 24 hours. I can't just go back across.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Do you get any or much Canadian craft beer other than Unibrew?
No, that's pretty much it that I know of. I would love to get obviously Half Pints, Flying Monkeys, Muskoka. Did I say that right, by the way?
Muskoka,
yeah. I really like the Mad Times IPA. That was really good. But no, we don't get any of that other than like you said. What was the one you said?
Unibrew.
Unibrew, yeah. I always call it Le Fin du Monde, because that's the only one I really look
at. That's probably one of the few that's worth drinking.
Yeah. That means that they're not bad beers. They're all very similar. And they're vastly overrated for people that don't get it regularly, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah. Because it's like one of the big Canadian craft beers that kind of gets...
Yeah, like if I didn't live in Canada and I had to choose one Canadian craft brewery to get, it's not going to be Unibrew.
No, they wouldn't even be like top 50.
No, it would be like De La Ciel or, you know,
Flying Monkeys
or something like that.
Yeah,
definitely. Man, I'm so glad. Since Colin went and we talked about the place, I'm like, I got to go check it out. So when I went up there last time I went to Toronto, I definitely had a great time up there, Flying Monkeys.
Cool.
I think I'm going back in August, so...
how long are you staying?
It's going to be a work trip, so it's going to be the same thing. I'm only going for, like, a weekend, so...
Stay a little extra day.
It's a very good possibility. we can have that conversation when I find out the dates that I'm going.
Yep. You know I'm always down, so...
Yep. So, we'll see. Because, I mean, I'm doing the Darkness Days for sure in October at Minneapolis, so... That's a... That's a must. Go to Cirilli. Go, if enough people go down, we're going to rent the pedal pub.
Oh, that would be so cool.
And Minnesota, one of the few states in which you can have beer on it.
Yeah. That's why we're going to rent it. We're going to get a keg of Cirilli Furious and just pedal around downtown.
Yeah.
And get trashed on Cirilli Furious.
Oh, but Bender, though, would be good.
It'll depend on the weather.
That's true.
Honestly, you can add any Surly beer in the keg and it'd be awesome.
Yeah, that is true.
Really
not.
Yeah. Keg of Darkness?
Yeah, I think that pedal pub would be in a ditch. Yeah.
Do you think that you would get a keg of darkness?
Yeah. No, there's no way we'd get a keg of
darkness. So we want to buy a keg of darkness. Well, we kind of don't really sell it. Well, you know, we're going to pedal around Minneapolis with it. Okay, done.
A good pitch. Let's do it exactly like that. So what has kind of been going on in like the craft beer scene for you down in the Michigan area?
Well, Shorts Brewing, and I think I gave you guys, well, at least Colin, I gave a couple of bottles of Shorts, I think, on our when we met up in Chicago. They just turned 10, and they had a big celebration up there. It was wild. So usually about 5,000 people go to the Michigan Brewers Guild Winterfest. That's like one day in Grand Rapids. They had over 5,000 people in Beller, Michigan, which is like, I mean, it is just a small little strip. Like they just have their original pub there, and it is maybe a little downtown. It's just a tourist town. That's it. Like there's ski hills around it, golf courses in the summer. There's a big resort called Shanty Creek where I ended up staying at, and right by Lake Bel Air, and it's actually in Bel Air, Michigan. So they had a big blowout where they had 94 beers on tap. A lot of their regular beers that were barrel aged, and a lot of like specialty stuff that you're only going to get there. So, and then stood in line, got pre-sale, bought this beer called they call it Stash Bender, and it was a double IPA, very good. And it was their 10th birthday beer. And also got their anniversary ale, which they release every year around this time since it's their birthday. But so Joe Short, the owner of Shorts, got up. They had a big tent full of music. They had food. You never waited in line too long because they had beer spread out across the they blocked off like probably 4 or 5 city blocks, and it was
crap.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like I wouldn't say 4 or 5 city blocks, but it was pretty much the whole little downtown strip. So I don't know how many, you know, how big Bel Air is, but it was cool because they spread it out and you never were waiting that long. And you bought wooden tokens instead of like tickets, and one token was $5 and one beer was $5, but it was a 16-ounce pour. I was like, oh boy. So, and food was $5. So you got a slice of pizza. Or like 2 slices of pizza, $5, or anything else you wanted. So it was really well done, and everything was laid out. I would definitely go up every year for their birthday celebration, but I wanted to go this year, especially since they turned 10, and it was like a big bash this year.
Is this the one you sent me all those pictures from?
Yes, that okay, is. Yeah. This is the one where I sent you all the. Well, I went to a couple before that, but yeah, I did send you a bunch of like celebration pictures of the beer, the lake, and all that stuff. So, And the mind blowing stat that he said, mind you, Shorts is only a Michigan only brewery, so I mean they don't distribute outside of the state, and they're just Michigan only. In the 10 years, they've served over they've made over 7 million pints of beer.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. They don't distribute outside of state for some reason. So I have no clue why, but every now and then they'll do like a tap takeover in DC, and just for a week or whatever, and that's it. So
cool. That's neat. We haven't had anything exciting going on here.
No.
The last exciting beer related thing was. It's a Half Pints Old Red Barn a year ago.
Wait, which one was that one?
That's their sour.
They only had they only had 500 bottles of it.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And it was aged for like 2 years. It was really, really good.
Yeah. Did we bring a bottle down to Chicago?
I don't think so. Well, they had like a limit of like 3 bottles each or something.
Wait, aren't you guys like, we know the owner? They're like, yeah, 3 bottles, guys.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, even for that, it was one where it was...
That was so limited that I don't think Nicole got 3 bottles.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So yeah, are you guys big fans of sours?
Love sours. Yeah. Absolutely love them.
I never, like the first few times I had them, I thought, wow.
Oh, it took me a while to get in.
I think the first time I had one, I was in a pub in St. Petersburg, Florida, a couple of years ago, and I thought, wow, I think it was the first time I'd ever seen a sour on tap.
Okay.
And I thought, I've totally got to, I have no idea what it was. I thought, I got to try it.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, a taster. I thought, okay, I'm good. But since then, I've really...
Yeah, it took me a few bottles where I was like, this tastes like pure vinegar. This is way too sour. This is way too tangy. And then finally, like, my palate kind of adjusted to it. And I was like, I could drink them all the time.
Yeah.
There's just none available in Manitoba.
Yep, pretty much. There's
I have to be in the specific like mood for a sour. Like, I can't just go to a bar and be like, oh, I'll get the... Like, you guys obviously know Jolly Pumpkin, and they do sour beers, and you know, with the wild yeast, and I like them, but I have to be in the mood for... because I know exactly what I expect from them. Like, that vinegary, you know, that tartness from it.
I used to think like that a lot. And then I went to Belgium, and I drank so fucking many of them. I got to the point where I thought, you know what, I could just sit down and drink sours all day and nothing else.
Yeah.
I would be completely fine with that.
I mean, there's definitely that time and place for a specific style with whatever your mood is or whatever the experience is going on, whether you're at a barbecue or in a pub or whatever. But for the most part, I'm kind of past the point where if it's a style I like, I'll enjoy it wherever, whenever.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, a lot of people, the big thing with the MLCC here is they're like, oh, we don't want to get any stouts in because summer is coming. Well, I don't give a shit if it's summer or if it's winter. I want to drink a good fucking stout.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I, because Founders' big tagline is, every time they release, I think it's breakfast stout. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, it's stout season. It's stout season. I remember drinking one in the summer on Instagram. I put up, I remember the caption because people commented on it. And I was like, it may not be stout, or I go, stout season is not a place, it's a state of mind.
Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, stout season is called being awake.
Stout season is every time I crack a beer, let's be honest.
But there is something to be said about like the seasonal drink, because right, I mean, it's still kind of cold here. It's 40 degrees. Like, there's a high of 60 today, which I don't know, what is that in Celsius? 15
in real money.
No, but so it was still kind of cold, so I still kind of feel like drinking a Bourbon County or something like that. I don't feel like drinking a heavily hopped IPA yet.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, there's definitely like when you're sitting on a patio, there's nothing like a nice crisp pilsner or a nice wheat beer or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I love a good like hoppy pilsner.
Yeah,
over summer, pills.
Yeah. So I mean, it definitely, like, there definitely is that time and place, but I'm definitely past the point where it could be 40 degrees and I'm like drenched in sweat, and there's a good stout on the menu. I'm not gonna blink and order it.
Yeah.
So.
So how fanatical are you guys about the temperature of the stout, or you know, like specific beers and temperature?
I would say that we drank this too cold.
Well, we started too cold.
It's warming up right now, but it was like almost fridge temperature when we cracked it.
Yeah,
I would say that's too cold for for any stout.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because I have the beer collection in the basement, and I didn't even put it in the fridge because I knew we were drinking Bourbon County, so I was like, I'll just let it sit in the basement.
Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah, no, like, actually in my basement, I can pull the beers out from down there and drink them for something like this, no problem, without putting them in the fridge.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, yeah, the fridge, we're in my apartment, so there's no basement.
Yeah. Although, if it was winter, he could just crack the window and put it by the window for 5 minutes, yeah, and it would be chilled perfectly, yeah, not too cold, still kind of room temperature.
Yeah, but, I don't think I'm too crazy. I mean, I come from Britain, right, so drinking warm beer is old hat.
Yeah.
Although I did notice when I was in Britain over winter, I had a few kind of, I mean, still British IPAs, but slightly kind of more like hoppy, more citrusy IPAs. And I thought, you know, I could maybe do with this being a bit colder.
that's when you get hit with the bartender's towel across the face.
Yeah, exactly. But then again, an English bitter needs to be that temperature. Otherwise, it's just...
Yeah, and I think if a beer is tasty room temperature, it's going to be tasty cold. And if it's not so tasty room temperature, then maybe it needed to be cold, and maybe that's a bad thing. So...
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? I mean, that's why Coors Light is always like, hey, your beer needs to be really fucking cold. Because it's going to taste like ass if you have it at room temperature.
Yeah, agree 100%.
Well, should we start talking about some beer websites that we...
I guess so. Well, I mean, we'll get the first one out of the way, Untappd, which we had an episode about.
Yeah, Untappd. We all... I mean, I rarely use... Tim Mather. I rarely use the web interface at all. I always just use the mobile app, so...
Yeah, that's true. I use the web interface sometimes, though, because it's useful for, you know, something like this, checking out beers and seeing what you've had from the brewery and that kind
that's
of stuff.
That's fair.
But no, that's true. Well, that's a good point. I use the app most of the time. Untappd.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I rarely use the computer version. So the only time I really did use the computer version was when I was trying to claim the home brewery and put the name up there. That's the only time I've used the computer version.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's fair enough.
I mean, for me, I don't actually, when we kind of talked about doing this, the idea, I didn't realize how little beer websites I actually frequented.
No, I know. It's crazy.
I frequent, like, Rate Beer and Beer Advocate a lot for information.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not... I find the forums and the comments too... Not welcoming, is the nice way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that's kind of why I don't... Like, honestly, if I could go and talk about beer on a forum with some like-minded people, it'd be great. But I posted a few things like at one point, and it was just like, you're not helping me at all. You're just like, I feel like it's, you're just all internet trolls just on the beer website.
No, I agree. I think it's like, it's almost like craft beer elitist kind of people that are on there that you're just like, they're not approachable. That's why people get like a bad idea of some of the
people. That's true. It's funny because I rate beer. Like, there is a whole community of people who are really insane about rate beer.
Yeah.
They rate like thousands of beers and they're all like super intense about it. But you want to be like, dude, you're fucking drinking beer.
Yeah.
This isn't your job. Nobody thinks you're a better person because of this. Just relax a little bit.
And that's the one thing I told my friend that we went up to Shorts with is like, craft beer people are like great people in person. Like, you're all like-minded. You're all waiting in line. I've never had like at the beer fest or anything. I've never had a bad experience where you bump into somebody and you get into a fight. You're just like, oh, sorry about that. And then you just make so many friends when you're in line and all. It's exactly. Just great atmosphere.
I mean, that's kind of like Canada, but nice. We're all just friends.
Yeah.
Bumping into each other.
Says the
in
person
line.
Who's not an actual citizen. But I had tweeted kind of earlier, like, what beer websites do people visit? And Dan Kijiji had kind of messaged us saying the Talk Beer website is fairly good and not quite as judgmental as or elitist as Beer Advocate and Rate Beer. So I haven't really checked it out yet, but
it has an interesting logo.
If that's the case, then I'm it looks like somebody drunk made it.
Yeah, it does actually. The other one that I was thinking of is this. What's that one that you've looked at that you kind of seem to look at a lot that's got all the cool labels?
Oh, Beautiful Beer. That's the one I go to all the time.
I love that site.
I love that site because it's all about like the design and stuff like that. It's not necessarily the beer. Like, if there's a good design Coors Light, that will be on there.
Yeah.
Like, which is cool because it's more of a design photography website than a beer website.
Right.
But it's literally just all beer and like beer boxes, photos.
Yeah. Packaging and whatever.
So I really enjoy that site.
Well, that sounds like I've never heard of that site until you actually talked about it.
Yeah, and I was a graphic designer, and it's kind of my job, and it's kind of cool to see that sort of side of it, because, you know, you're talking about beer with people, the label is really the last thing on most people's mind.
And I love that it's, because, I mean, there's a lot of beer websites that will talk about beers that I will never, ever, ever see in my life.
Yeah.
And, like, some of them are, like, the Pliny's that, you know, I might eventually, but some are, like, the tiny breweries in, like, the middle of buttfuck nowhere that I have no idea, like, I've never heard of before, and it's, like, it's cool. Like, it's awesome that I can see this label and whatever, but it's, like, I really don't know. But Oh Beautiful Beer covers so, like, the spectrum is so wide that there's so many, like, Canadian craft beers that show up on there and, like, common stuff that you'll see in the States. Like, there's no, it doesn't seem like there's a limit to, like, it's like, oh, we're just trying to be, like, cool and
no, shows. They show, like, they'll show crap, like, a label for a crappy macro beer if it's a cool label.
Yeah.
But they'll also show a label for some tiny little brewery that you've never fucking heard of.
Yeah.
That's the website, that kind of website I'd really like, because then you get to discover stuff that you can look for, or you can actually go out of your way and be like, okay, that's cool, I'll look for them, because they're small-time brewery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for me, the only other site that I check regularly is the Beer Ness for her, like, cooking. So it's like,
oh, that's
beer,
true.
Beer
yeah,
cooking.
I do look
and
at that a lot.
I haven't actually bought her book yet, which I kind of feel bad because I frequent her site so much, and it would actually probably be useful to have that book. But I mean, I've probably only made about 3 or 4 actual, like, straight up recipes from her site, but I've based a ton. Off of what she's done.
I was going to say, I haven't made any of her recipes, but I have, like, you know, I looked on there a bunch
for
recipes.
For ideas and stuff like that, So, what about you, Amaya? What sites do you kind of frequent?
So, in the beer forum, but in the homebrew forum, I go to a website called Beer Toad a lot, and it is very cool. You basically sign up, and you can add recipes, or you can look at other people's recipes. So, you can... there's categories where you say, okay, ABV, what kind of ABV you want? Okay, hoppy, not hoppy, IBUs, and OG, Final Gravity, and you, like, they have so many cool clones, and I just, when I'm thinking of a homebrew idea, I'm like, okay, this is the first website I'll go to, because I'll see, get see what other people do it, how they do it. There's like Zombie Dust clones, and obviously you're not going to make it as good as the original, but still fun trying, so.
Yeah.
And another website that I really like frequenting is the Beer Labels in Motion. Have you guys been to that one?
I've seen it before. It's when you mentioned it the other day, I was like, oh, I completely forgot about that site. Yeah, but yeah, that site is definitely cool.
Yeah, I was going to say Adrian probably really appreciates it, being a graphic designer, getting all the animation into it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's funny. You know, it's weird because beer labels, you know, you don't really think about, animated. You just kind of see it on the shelf, like, oh, that's cool.
It's static on. Design.
Not, yeah, exactly.
Not motion design, yeah.
Which, and, you know, for me, I don't really design anything that's in motion, but I would do a lot of, not beer label design, but, like, you know, some packaging design, and, you know, I would design some things that are somewhat similar to that.
Yeah.
And I would never, ever make something like that in motion. So it's kind of cool to see it. See things that, you know, I know that the person who designed it never intended for it to move. But it is moving.
Yeah. No, and then the way, whoever runs that website, the way they come up with the creative labels in motion is pretty cool, too.
Adrian is very distracted with one of them right now.
Yep. They're Pork Slap. Pale
Ale. Oh, nice.
That one's a cool one where the pigs actually slap each other's butts. Yeah. And obviously the big one I go to is Beer Advocate. But that, mostly, I don't even go on there for beer reviews. I do, but I don't. If it's a beer that's I don't know about, I'll just look at it and I'll take it with a grain of salt. Because I know how elitist the reviews are. So if it's like a 80% or higher, I'll probably end up liking it. I already know that, but I just, again, I take it with a grain of salt. But mostly I go on there when, for some reason, people think I'm a vast knowledge of craft beer about everything. So they're like, hey, when I'm in this city, where should I go? They don't know, but I just Google it and it goes right to the Beer Advocate site.
Yeah.
And you know, top breweries in the area, top restaurants that serve beer. So it's all there.
It's got all, like, it Beer Advocate has, so, like, in my opinion, I would go Beer Advocate over Rate Beer.
Me too.
And I think Beer Advocate does everything so well, but the community is what scares me away from being part of the community, essentially.
Yeah.
Where if the community was more welcoming, and it's probably a good thing that they're not, because I would probably spend way too much time on there.
Yeah.
Is just, it, like, you can do whatever you want. Like, when you're going on a trip, you can find stuff. When you're in a liquor store and you want to look up a beer for just the briefest information. And like you said, like, you know, anything over an 80 is going to be good. I'd even say anything over a 70 I like most of the time.
Yeah.
I agree.
So,
yeah, because usually most of the stuff that isn't good is rated such.
Yeah.
But it is. It's really useful. I use Beer Advocate a lot when I'm traveling or planning to travel, or when I'm in a new liquor store, and you know there's a whole bunch of beer and I have no clue what to buy.
That's what I really like about that is the smaller breweries that you would never actually, people would never tell you to go to, but you might be close to it, so you're like, okay, I'll go check it out.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, exactly. And that's one of those things, right? When you're in a foreign city and you Google, like, you know, best breweries and stuff, you get all those kind of lists and articles.
Yeah.
And most of them are written by people who probably don't actually know which is the best brewery.
Yeah.
Or which is the, like, the best IPA or whatever. And, you know, they're written by journalists, which is fine. But they're not really, like, beer experts.
Yeah.
They're writing experts or travel experts. So, but Beer Advocate is really useful to get, like, the true take on
the beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another website that I really that I really go to is Beer Pulse. Do you guys check out? Have you guys been to that one yet?
I have not. I've never even heard of it.
No, I've heard of it. I've heard of Beer Pulse for some reason, but I've never been on it.
So it is really cool when you want to know new beers that are coming out. Like they'll be the first ones that I've noticed that do label releases. Like I found out just like maybe yesterday or 2 days ago that Founders is doing another Backstage Series beer, and they're doing an India Pale Lager, which is going to be due out in August. But I mean, nobody else is, other than Founders, maybe having a like a thing on Twitter. You might not have even noticed that, but they have all their new beer releases, and he updates the labels every day. This guy named Adam Nelson, I believe.
Okay.
So he runs the website, and it's sweet because you'll see new release. And this is when the labels are approved, so I don't even know if the beers are brewed yet. So
when they're approved, what do you mean?
Okay, so labels have to be approved by the I don't know what government body, but labels have to be, name and label has to be approved before they can actually slap the label on the beer.
Really?
Yes. So I don't know if it's, I forget what department it is, but I know it's in DC, and you have to fill out a form and you got to submit it, and they can reject it.
Oh, so it's like a federal thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm curious how Clown Shoes always gets by it then.
But what's funny about that is that Canada is way more restrictive when it comes to beer, but that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, if Half Pints wants to release a beer next week that they've got, you know, 10 bottles of,
yeah,
you know, they could write the label on if they wanted to, as long as it's got all the right information on it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a little bit more to it than that, because they still need to apply to sell it.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they need to apply. They need to apply to
they
sell
need
it.
To tell the MLCC that they're going to sell it. They need to apply.
So is that because they're in province?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That's because they're in province.
Okay. That's
if they want, like, if they wanted to brew a 50-liter batch today,
yeah,
and bottle it and sell it next week or tomorrow or whatever,
okay,
they could totally do that. They still have to obviously tell the MLCC and pay duty and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But they don't have to apply for approval to do it.
I guess that makes sense because they're in province.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's also no label approving body.
Yeah.
You know, even the MLCC.
No, as long as you meet there's a set requirements on,
yeah,
what you need,
yeah,
to
do. Yeah, like you have to have the ABV,
like,
on there.
Anytime
the
Rogue ships bottles up here, they have to put a sticker on with the ABV.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's mandatory that you have the ABV on all bottles in Manitoba.
Yeah, you have to have the ABV, you have to have the volume. I think you have to have the place that it was produced.
Yes. No, because Farmery.
Yeah, they have it on there, though.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
They have Bracebridge, Ontario on it.
Mm-hmm.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah.
I know some weird beer laws here. Like, I know, like, alcohol by volume here is not... You don't have to be exact, which is weird to me. That's why a lot of craft brewers will put approximately 6.5%.
Really?
But how off can you be? Because
I think
0.2 we can be off, or 0.3.
Oh, is it? Okay. Like, I don't know how off you can be, but I know for a fact that because they don't want to get into the whole false labeling.
Yeah. Okay.
Stuff. So if it's like a 6.3 and you say it's a 6.5, you know,
yeah,
if somebody was that much of a stickler.
But it's not mandatory for you guys to have ABV on it.
Depends on the state.
Is it state by state?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, it's by state, because some places you shop and everywhere has it, and other places, like, nobody has it.
Okay.
Well, some weird laws in Texas, if you're selling a beer in Texas, it has to be called a malt beverage.
What?
Yeah. And Ohio, you can't have beer over, I think, 11%. They consider it a wine.
And in Texas, actually, a brewery can't tell you where you can buy their beer.
What?
Yeah. Because Dogfish did a thing, I think it was like a year ago. Somebody had tweeted them asking where they can find Dogfish Head in like some Texas town or whatever.
Yeah.
And their response was, I can't tell you, but I'm sure some of the people from Texas will be able to point
you
in the right
direction. And they retweeted it?
Yeah.
That's great.
So the government body in the U.S. that controls beer labeling is the Alcohol and Tobacco and Trade Bureau. It's part of the USA Department of Treasury.
Okay.
And on their website, there's a form that you fill out. It says application for certification for beer label approval.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, yeah, and you could do it right there online.
Well, you would hope so, given the amount of breweries.
Yeah.
God, could you imagine? Well, the other thing is, I wonder, like, how many of these breweries, like the big ones, take a chance and know that their labels are going to be pretty much approved and actually brew the beer ahead of time, or
I would think that even smaller breweries like that are established, I would think they know the rules.
Yeah, and to be fair, if it gets rejected, it's not necessarily that the beer is rejected, it's just the label. So you can just redo the label.
Yeah.
I mean that would be the thing. It's like if you're gonna print 10,000 labels,
yeah,
and you need to know that it's gonna be approved.
Yeah.
They might not take the chance on that, but the beer is probably already being brewed.
Yeah. No, I would think that the only times they don't get approved is if they don't include some piece of vital information, or if they have a dumb name.
Well, and it always baffles my mind because I've heard of like some stupid beer names. Like you're like, why do they reject that? But then there's a beer in Michigan called Bean Flicker, which is a coffee blonde that got approved. Yeah,
it took a sure and a second to get it.
Yeah, and even Flying Dog's Pearl Necklace. I'm like, really? Yeah. And then you see the dog with a pearl necklace on, and I'm like, that got approved?
That's true.
So I probably don't think
people don't necessarily get those jokes, though.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, some people don't get the jokes. Like, here in Manitoba, if you want to get a personalized license plate, it's relatively easy compared to some jurisdictions.
Yeah.
You basically pay $100, you tell them what you want your license plate to be, and you know, it goes through an approval process, but it's easy to do and really not that expensive. But they still have a board of people that approves every single personalized license plate to make sure it, you know, isn't rude or contains swear words or offend, and they're really rigorous.
Yeah.
Oh, I read an article about it a few months ago about how like the steps that they go to, and it's not like they just hit up Urban Dictionary and Google something. they test it back, like reading it backwards and forwards and like upside down. Like, it's ridiculous.
Huh.
All for personalized license plate.
Wow.
But what's funny is because we're in because Manitoba is so small, tons of people get personalized license plates because it's cheap. And usually they can get what they want.
Exactly, yeah.
I wonder if I could get Adrian.
You should get Trimble Down.
Well, that's too long. 7 characters.
Can you do a hashtag on a license plate?
No.
Oh, because that would be awesome.
Numbers, letters, and spaces. Trimble Down would be amazing. It's too long, though.
Are you sure? I swear that there's one longer than 7.
It's 7 or 8. It's definitely not longer than that.
Still going to be some longer.
I could just get Trimble. And then put like a hashtag sticker and then down next to it.
I'm sure if you ever got pulled over, that'd be fun trying to explain.
Yeah, I see. Well, officer, it's this thing where I drink. Sir, have you been drinking? No. Snoozing? Yes.
But that's because I was drinking.
So we slapped it off by now, I swear.
So can we talk about the best craft beer website ever? Twitter, obviously, because I met both you through that.
That's true, actually.
Like, yeah,
that's a good point. It's funny. I was thinking about this morning. For all of the great websites that are out there, Twitter is by far and away the most useful.
Yeah,
you know, and now Instagram for the most part. I've met so many people from Instagram. Even like when I went to the short celebration, I met 3 or 4 people that I know from Instagram that we had a beer, we talked, we just hung out for a little bit. So
yeah, oh, that's cool. Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like the social media kind of, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I find out so much information. That's from where breweries, I
pretty much get all my information.
Where I find out about new beer. Yeah. Like it all comes from there.
And also the other good part about Twitter and you get other people's perspective, even if you may not like it, but you get the other perspective and you'll start reading articles that you're like, why am I reading this again? Like, like, how do I get on this website? So,
but no, you're right, though. It's more of an organic experience, because if you're on any one website, I mean, okay, Beer Advocate and Rate Beer, you know, they have comments and blah, blah, blah. But most websites, it's a curated experience. Yeah. You have an editor or, you know, a journalist or whatever. There's somebody that's deciding what you get to see.
Yeah.
Whereas in Twitter and Instagram, you get all of it. For better or worse.
And I've set up 2 or 3 beer trades just from Twitter and Instagram alone. So I've gotten beers from Nebraska, Texas, so Florida. So just cool meeting like-minded people, and obviously like sending your state beers back down there that they can't get, and vice versa.
I've met a lot of people through Twitter in general, but a good portion of them have been all beer related and stuff like that.
I did not realize that there was anybody in Nebraska. Let alone somebody with the internet.
Okay, I'm telling you guys this, there's a brewery in Lincoln called Zipline Brewing. They make some awesome ass beers. And my friend Jonathan from Nebraska, every time he sends me a beer package, he'll add Zipline, because he knows every beer I've had from them is good. So I can see them growing really fast, really soon.
Cool. I stayed a night in a cheap motel in Nebraska once.
On your way to Denver, right?
Yeah. And that was it. That's all I did in Nebraska.
What city were you in?
It was not a city. it was a bunch of motels with a gas station.
That's fair.
Honestly, I can't even remember. It was on an interstate. I don't know. I'm now going to Google Map it, because this is going to drive me insane.
Isn't that funny how now you can just Google it? Before, we'd be like, okay, we got to get out the maps, try to find out where we were.
It was off the I-80. And I think it might have been North Platte.
That sounds like a big city.
It is actually a city. Or a town of some kind. It's not that big, though.
Well, I mean, when I say big city, it's probably... I've heard of it, so...
Bigfoot, Nebraska.
Yeah, exactly. Which might be big for Manitoba, too, by the way.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's true,
actually. Like, I make fun of it, Nebraska, but I'm sure there's, a lot more people there than there is in Manitoba.
And another great brewery from there is Nebraska Brewing, which they do... You guys would like. They do a lot of barrel-aged stuff.
Oh, sweet. That's cool.
So... Yeah, they did this barrel-aged stout called Black Betty, and then it was barrel-aged in whiskey, bourbon barrels, and they did another beer called Sexy Betty, which was which was in cognac barrels, stout.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's craft beer scene, from what I've seen from when he used to trade me to now, is growing fast over there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Little pit stop on the way to Denver next time.
No, yeah, for real. And of course, we'll go to Beer Advocate to find out what store to go to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll wrap this thing up. We've talked a little bit about everything tonight, from beer to highways to small towns in Nebraska and beer websites. So, Amaya, where can we find you on the internet?
So on Twitter, I am Amaya Pill. Instagram, same thing. It's AmeyaPil across the board, Untapped, everything. So nice. Keeping it easy for you guys.
It's nice and simple. Adrian, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adrian Trimble.
Have you considered changing it to Trimble Down?
No, I have not. Not going to happen.
No, are you sure?
And I'm pretty sure if you do the hashtag Trimble Down, it's all you guys. So
absolutely. Yeah. It totally is. There is no other Trimble that's getting as down as I am.
and a tagline is born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on the internet at Senquist, on Twitter, Instagram, Untapped, all that good stuff. So thanks everybody for listening. Thanks Amaya for being on another episode.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess we will talk to you guys in 2 weeks.